Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This show is for college recruiting fans.
What a run! He's got a lane! Wow! Touchdown! What an athlete!
The inside story on the Ducks, the Beavers, the national recruiting scene, and high school prospects across Oregon and Southwest Washington. On Point Credit Union presents Recruiting with Andrew Nemec. The Oregon Live expert, players, coaches, and fans follow. Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080.
Ooh-wee.
The Fan.
Hello and welcome to Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. This show coming at you via podcast. A lot to talk about. The late signing period is nearing quickly. Oregon State is now done. They have their class complete. Oregon still waiting on a couple of spots. The McDonald's All-American teams were announced. That proved to be massive news for the Oregon Ducks women's basketball program. All five of Oregon's signees in the 2020 class were selected in the McDonald's All-American game of the top 24 prospects in the country. Let me say that again. All five Oregon signees were selected as among the top 24 prospects in the country. Sasha Goforth, Oregon State's big-time signee, also making the McDonald's All-American game, as does Cameron Brink, the Mountainside star. She played for Southridge, transferred to Mountainside. She's headed to Stanford, but a local Oregon star also selected for that. We'll break that down. We've got to talk about the Polynesian Bowl. I want to talk about some of the breakout stars from the All-American Bowls. And then Oregon added, sort of, another five-star prospect. It comes with an asterisk here because he was already in the class. He was a four-star prospect. Gets the bump to five stars. How does that work? How much does that matter? And what does it mean historically for the Ducks? We're going to be talking about all of that on today's show. But first, Oregon State's done. Their class is complete. They had 25 spots for this class. They filled them. Tyler Murano, the two-star offensive tackle, commits to Oregon State earlier this week. I've said this before. I will say it again. It is obviously true at this point. The recruiting services are at a point now where if a kid commits to a Power 5 conference school, doesn't matter if he was unranked, doesn't matter if he was a two-star, he's getting a bump to a three-star prospect. We've seen it time and time again. I said that last year or 2 years ago about Oregon State's class when they got a couple of two stars. It takes a while to evaluate a kid. Sometimes you want to wait and see him in person. We're seeing guys get a bump within the hour. A kid commits to a Power 5 school, not just at Oregon State, everywhere. We see that at Washington State. We see it at Cal. We see it outside the Pac-12 conference. When a two-star recruit commits to a Power 5 school, they automatically get a bump to three-star status. Unless there's some glaring issue. They just automatically do it. And so that's going to be the new normal. So when we look at recruiting classes, we're going to see more three stars, a higher percentage of three stars for these Pac-12 schools. Doesn't necessarily mean that these schools are recruiting at a higher level in terms of two stars versus three stars. It just means the recruiting services have changed the way they do it. And the reason why, to be honest, is a three-star distinction is supposed to be a guy who can compete at the Power 5 level. Well, if a guy has Power 5 offers, it means Power 5 coaches think that kid can compete at the Power 5 level, which makes him a three-star by definition. So that's why they're going to do it that way going forward, it seems. Don't have a huge problem with it. I always am a firm believer in stick to your evaluations. I retweeted yesterday a tweet, and it was a podcast breakdown for the Oregonian and Oregon Live before I worked at 1080, breaking down Justin Herbert. He hadn't played a game at Oregon yet, and my analysis was, I don't care what the rankings are. To me, he was a tweener four- or five-star prospect. He was one of the top five or six quarterbacks in the nation. I had a chance to see the Elite 11 quarterback camp where they invite roughly 20 of the nation's best quarterbacks. They try to whittle that down to an elite 11, the best 11 quarterbacks in the country. I said that year I thought he was one of the best five or six guys in the country. So I think you should stick to your evaluations. I don't like I don't like the bump to 3-star automatically, but at the same time, if that's what the ranking sites want to do, you know, to each their own, it saves them from getting criticism. If there's ever a 2-star kid that ends up being a star, they can't point and say, I'm a 2-star. They have to at least say 3-star, which, again, is a Power 5 evaluation. Grading the Oregon State Beavers recruiting class. We're going to do it position by position, and then I'll give an overall grade. I'm doing the same thing with Oregon later. Their class isn't complete. We're going to be talking about each position, the class as a whole, and also kind of a breakdown of how they do with the transfer portal and JC kids versus high school kids. So a lot of different grades flying at you. And the first position's the quarterback position. Oregon State, early in the recruiting cycle, lands Ben Gulbrandsen. Ben Gulbrandsen was a backup quarterback last year, and there was a lot of hype that he was going to come in and be a star, that potentially he would come in and blow up and be a major, major get for Oregon State, that his stock potentially, it was a bit of an unknown, but potentially could rise substantially. That was the buzz about him when he committed. A lot of coaches in that area go, you know, bit of an unknown, but we'll see. There are a lot of people that really like him. To be completely candid, the bloom is off the rose with that to a large extent. Didn't have the senior year that people thought. Threw a lot of interceptions. Accuracy is a question. His mechanics are really long. I thought he would tighten that up a little bit. His mechanics are really, really long. So it's really easy to see what he's going to do. And it cost him even at the high school level, where that windup allowed DBs to break on the ball and he threw too many interceptions. The gap between high school football and Power 5 conference football is gigantic. He's going to have to clean some things up. Across the board, the evaluations on him with his senior year was that his stock, he went from an unknown with potential to a known and real concern. There's real concern there about his ability across the board with coaches I've talked to in that area, with evaluators I've talked to in that area. So that one, it honestly looks early like a misfire. Could be wrong. He's a high school kid, right? We have no idea. We don't know. And Ben Gulbrandsen could go tighten up his mechanics and make me look like a fool. I've looked like a fool before. I will again. But that's the current buzz on him. I have not seen him in person. I have no evaluation. Haven't seen him. The film, his arm does look really whippy. It does look like his mechanics are really long. The arm strength doesn't look like it's there. A lot of times, the reason that the mechanics are really long is because you're trying to generate power, because your arm isn't super strong. So that's as much as I can really see on film. He looks really accurate on film because they're all complete, right? Your highlights are all your best plays. So not in love with Ben Gulbrandsen, but I love what they did in getting a ready-made potential starter. They hosted Jack Sears, the USC transfer, on an official visit, or on a visit, and looked like they were going to go that way. And instead of just kind of, and this was very old staff, this was very Gary Anderson, fall in love with a guy, recruit him all the way through, even if you don't necessarily have a chance or you don't think you're going to get him, stick with it, don't really have a backup plan, put all your eggs in one basket. Instead of doing that, they recruited Jack Sears, but also asked the staff to look into other guys. Let's find other guys. And with updated JC film, before any rankings came out, they determined that Chance Nolan was the guy. They like Chance Nolan. Went all in on Chance Nolan 3 years to play three, brought him in and secured him, pivoted away from Jack Sears, who ended up at San Diego State, and said, we like this kid better. He's got more years of eligibility. That's advanced recruiting. To have a guy that you think you might get or you have a good shot to get and to say, we're not satisfied with this, let's keep looking to make sure. Not because they weren't satisfied with Jack Sears, but they were in a position where they felt they needed to continue to update the big board. And the JC film every once in a while uncovers a hidden gem. And I think they found one in Chance Nolan. I think Nolan's going to be the starter. I know that people like Tristan Jebbia. I know that there are some people who feel like he's further along, obviously, in understanding the playbook at Oregon State. I think that's a given, considering he's been there a while. But I think Chance Nolan's the more dynamic player. And I think Nolan is eventually the starter. Maybe not right away. But I do think Chance Nolan is your primary starter next year. It's a prediction. Could be wrong. Either way, love Chance Nolan. Throws a nice deep ball. His arm strength's a little questionable. His pocket awareness is good. He can run. I think he finished fifth in rushing in his league, or in his state, in the JC ranks, ahead of many, many running backs. He ran for almost 1,000 yards or over 1,000 yards. Really like Chance Nolan. Overall grade for Oregon State at the quarterback position, B+. Running back, Oregon State's got a lot of smaller bodies. We're going to talk about that at receiver. We're going to talk about that at the running back spot, obviously. And they needed a bigger bodied back, and they landed Isaiah Newell. Isaiah Newell had early offers from a lot of Pac-12 schools. Oregon had offered him. He was also viewed by a lot of schools as an outside linebacker. They're going to bring him in and make him their bruising running back. It fit a need. He's the highest rated high school prospect in their class. That's a little concerning long-term, not because Isaiah Newell's not good, but because they only landed one of the top 700 kids in the country. That is not a recipe for long-term success. It just isn't. You look at the history of the Pac-12, if you aren't recruiting at least a handful of top 500, top 600 kids every year, teams that do that generally lose games. Even Washington State, you know, you look at that and they say they under-recruit. Yes, but they were still landing some skill position guys that were top 700 guys pretty regularly. So this is not a sustainable recipe for success in history. It might be that the transfer portal has changed the way that we view recruiting in the sense that you can do some patchwork and overcome that. But historically in the Pac-12 conference, you have to have multiple top 500, 600, 700 kids to end up being a competitor in the Pac-12. I like Isaiah Newell. He's a nice fit. They needed a big-bodied back. They went and got one, and he is physical, potentially an outside backer if running back doesn't work out, but I think it will. I think he's a nice blend for what they needed. I gave it a B-. Again, highest rated high school prospect in their class. Really talented kid. The wide receiver position, we got to take this as a whole big chunk. I think they did a nice job in getting Trey Lowe as a walk-on, former Army All-American Bowl selection out of Jesuit High School, went to Washington. His stock has obviously fallen. He was a four-star prospect and a scholarship athlete at Washington. He's a walk-on at Oregon State, but he's speedy. He's undersized. He is what they already have a lot of in Tyjon Lindsey and Anthony Gould and some of those kids, but if you get him for free and he could potentially be an impact player down the road, I really like that. This week, they landed Treshawn Harrison out of Florida State. He arrived on campus Sunday. I reported he started classes Wednesday. A few hours after that, Oregon State announced him and added him formally to the roster. He is in class. He's locked in. This is not a Devin Williams situation. Oregon State, credit to them. They dotted the T. They crossed the T's, dotted the I's, and made sure he was ready to go before they made any announcement. I like Treshawn Harrison. I thought he was originally an Oregon commit in the class of 2018, and he was a kid that I thought, frankly, was the gem of their class, and Willie Taggart did too, because he went to Florida State, and everybody thought, okay, who's this first offer going to be? And a coach, for a lot of people who don't know this, a lot of times the first offer is almost like a ceremonial thing. It's like, okay, make a statement with your first offer, and when you go to Florida State, there were a whole lot of people who thought he's going to offer some big-time Florida kid. He didn't. His first offer was Treshawn Harrison, which tells you what Willie Taggart thought of him. He was able to flip him, and it didn't work out at Florida State, but I love the athleticism. He's 6'2". They desperately need size, in this receiving core after Isaiah Hodgins moves on. But I really like Treshawn. He's going to try to play next season. Currently, he would be, without a waiver, he would be ineligible, but he has a really compelling case. Willie Taggart's fired. There's some family stuff where he wanted to be closer to home that is real. There's some real family stuff that he wanted to be closer to home. So those two factors are really going to help him. Love Trevor Pope and Silas Bolden. I think that Trevor Pope reminds me a little bit of a Deebo Samuel type for the 49ers. He's not an elite burner. He's got pretty good speed. He's physical. So he's that guy that you can put on a fly sweep and he can break some tackles. Trevor Pope's an interesting piece. Silas Bolden, I've had a number of people tell me that he is further along in his development than Victor Bolden was coming out of high school. Obviously, everybody who follows Oregon State football knows Victor Bolden was very, very good for Oregon State. I think this receiving core is underrated. The other player is Zariah Beeson. Zariah Beeson was a four-star prospect, dropped down to a three-star prospect, had some big-time offers. Frankly, the knock here is the film. Didn't necessarily look the part of a four-star receiver, and it may not be his fault. He plays in Texas, and he plays for a team that runs the football a lot. You go back to Jake Luton up in Washington when he was coming out of high school. They ran the Veer offense, and he wasn't given an opportunity to throw the football. Similar situation here with Zariah Beeson. He wasn't able to rack up yards. His film's not that impressive because his team almost exclusively runs it. There was an injury right before their state title game, and they went to a more pass-happy quarterback. Their backup was more of a thrower. They had to throw the ball more, and he looked more the part of a big-time prospect. So I give them a B here. Long-term, I have a little bit of a concern. They did address it to some extent with guys like Beeson and Treshawn Harrison, but you look at the depth chart next year, they've got Tyjon Lindsey, who's a small receiver. They've got Champ Fleming, who's 5'5", small receiver. Playmaker, good player, but just really small. Anthony Gould is a guy people think might factor in. He's undersized. Trevon Bradford might be one of their bigger receivers in terms of guys on the two deep at that position. And he was always considered an undersized guy. Now he's one of your bigger receivers. It's good that they got a lot of speed out there. I think we've seen that work for some programs when you get creative. Oregon State's been creative. They need big receivers. They just do. And this class didn't necessarily address that in full. They got some medium-sized guys, but they didn't get that 6'3", 6'4", red zone target. Go up and get it. And people can think that's kind of overstated, but look at Isaiah Hodgins and what he did in the red zone. He had 12 catches, 12 targets for 12 catches, and 9 touchdowns last year. Oregon State knows how to use a good red zone target. They're effective with it. I imagine they'll use that as a recruiting tool going forward. Look at what we can do with a big-bodied receiver in the red zone. We will get you open. We will get you the ball. But they didn't address it really this year. I gave the group a B. It's a good group. It's not an elite group. Again, solid job. And you look at it now, we've got B+, B-, B. I don't necessarily feel like I'm being generous with that. They landed the number one junior college quarterback in the country. Isaiah Newell is a nice need fit. If you want to say he's a C+ or a C because he's, you know, in that 500-600 range nationally, I'm fine with it. But because he's a big-bodied back and that's what they need, they get a little bit of a bump. And I love Treshawn Harrison. I love Trevor Pope. I think he's a sleeper. Zariah Beeson. So really good start offensively. The tight end position, another B for Oregon State. Jake Overman is the headliner, certainly of this group, and I think you could make an argument he's the most polished offensive recruit out of high school that they have. Jake Overman's a really good tight end. He's got potential to be really good, and you look at that tight end room, it's going to be a really good room. Tegan Quatoriano's young. Luke Musgrave's going to be a star at Oregon State. He'll play in the NFL. I don't think there's any doubt at this point. In this recruiting class, a really great job of recruiting. They landed Tommy Spencer, who's more of a blocking tight end. The day before, Jake Overman was expected to take his official visit with his family. Oregon State was only planning on taking one tight end. But the situation was awkward, so they asked Tommy Spencer to hold up on his announcement so that they could tell Jake Overman in person that they landed their tight end. Well, he was flying in. That's an awful, awful conversation to have when you fly your family and the very first thing a staff does is say, hey, we filled our tight end spot. But they reviewed the film. They liked him enough that he was going to use up one of their bonus spots for people who don't really know how recruiting works. You slot in what you want in your class. One quarterback, one running back, two receivers, three offensive linemen, whatever the case may be. And then you always kind of offensive best player we can get, defensive best player we can get. A lot of staffs do that. They determined Overman was one of those bonus guys, that this might be the best offensive guy we can bring in this class outside of what our needs. So let's get this kid. So that built up a lot of trust. Washington came in late and really wanted this kid, and it wasn't enough. He chose Oregon State over Washington. Great recruitment. Jake Overman's got a chance to be really, really good. Love that tight end room. Tommy Spencer is not going to be a sexy prospect. We'll never look at Tommy Spencer and say, man, what a playmaker. That kid has a 10-touchdown season. He's never going to do it. He's a blocking tight end. You need that in football, and he's good at it. So he fits nicely with Overman, with Musgrave, with Contoriano. I really like what they did there in terms of addressing needs. Overman, again, the good receiver, the household name tight end, because he's your receiving tight end. But Tommy Spencer is going to be a nice blend in some of those two tight end sets they like to run. The O-line, I've said this for a long time, this is their weakness. They've done a really poor job of recruiting offensive linemen. I gave this a D-. I thought this was generous. I think you could really easily give this an F. I know Mahalchuk really coaches guys up. Really does. And that's really the only reason I kept this from being an F, is he's taken guys that are, you know, the equivalent of 2-star guys or low 3-star guys and turned them into effective offensive linemen. But let's go back and look at it and even look at my evaluations. When they landed Blake Brandel, who is a three-star guy, I said I thought he'd end up being all-conference. That was one of my predictions on their class when that class came out. Blake Brandel will end up being all-conference. So I feel like I can spot him okay, or at least I, when I ask people and get an honest evaluation of who they got, I feel like what I'm giving to you is fair. The last two recruiting cycles, what I've gotten is they're recruiting Big Sky or Mountain West gamble O-linemen. Now, Mahalchik's great, and he'll coach him up, but I do think there has to be a floor. And at some point, Oregon State has to start getting guys who are at least Pac-12 other offer guys. And I like Cooper Darling, but he's an inside guy. He's probably a left guard for you or a right guard, but he's talented. He's probably the best of the group. Taliese Fuaga is really raw. We'll see. Tyler Murano, his other offer interest was Yale. Cal was looking at him, but hadn't offered him. He had no Mountain West, no Big Sky offers. Two-star guy. Oregon State beat Yale for him. He could pan out. I like him. He's 6'4 and a half. He's raw. He's definitely going to redshirt. He's definitely going to have to add weight. He's only 255. There's potential there. But in terms of a prospect right now, he's extremely raw. And then I like Corbin Sorensen. He started for three seasons at Portland State. He maxed out, not this year, but last year, as a third-team all-Big Sky guy. He's a tackle, but he's not. He's a guard for at the Pac-12 level. He is not a tackle at the Pac-12 level. There's just, watching the film, it's just, there's no way. So and he's got 1 year. So he's going to add some depth to your interior line, which is a need. At the same time, when I look at this and I say, what does Oregon State need? They need big bodies along the offensive line, and they need guys, especially with Mahalchik's ability to coach him up, and he can. He's one of the best offensive line coaches, probably one of the best 10 in the country, 10 to 15 in the country. His weakness and the reason he was available at Oregon State, the reason he's jumped around a lot, is he doesn't get the reputation as a good recruiter evaluator. Coaches up great kids, but kind of dips too low with who he gets. I mean, that's his reputation. Corbin Sorensen, 1 year. He's a patchwork guy. He's not going to be a breakout star for you. He's not going to be an elite all-conference guy. I know that because he wasn't in the Big Sky. So to expect him to do it at the Pac-12 level is silly. And Tiger Shanks was right here. In your own backyard, Lake Oswego, late riser, chose not to sign. If you watched him last year, and a lot of people did, you'd say, Nimick, you're insane. There's no way that dude is a big-time recruit. You'd be right. He was sloppy, sloppy, sloppy. Pretty good footwork, but slow feet. Slow mechanics. Because he was 6'5", 370. He dropped 50 pounds, hit the weight room, got up. He might even be actually, I think he's right around 6'6". I think I misspoke there. He's between 6'5 and 6'6", and he's 320. And he's good. He's really good. Arizona and Kansas came in late, really wanted to bring him in potentially for visits. He felt good about UNLV and committed. They got themselves a steal. Tiger Shanks has a chance because of the frame, because of the athleticism when he's trimmed down. He's got a chance to be an NFL right guard. That's his ceiling. Corbin Sorensen's ceiling, and by the way, Tiger Shanks has 5 years to play for. He's a high school kid. He's got 4 years of eligibility. Corbin Sorensen's ceiling is probably a rotational guard, and he's only got 1 year. I just think that's a misfire. I think when you can get the same player out of high school and he's got 4 years, take him, especially with that size. Don't love the O-line group. Overall, offense, really pretty good job. But again, back-to-back years where at the end of the cycle, the O-line is getting guys whose offers are Ivy League, Big Sky, and then low-level Mountain West. That can't happen long-term. That is not sustainable for success in the Pac-12 conference. You just have to be better up front. And I know Mahalchik can coach him up, but man, he's bringing him in at a real, real low floor, trying to coach him up to out of the basement, essentially. Defense, the D-line, this would have been an A. And it's no fault of Oregon State's. Alex Lemon, the number two junior college defensive end in the country, an offer from Oklahoma, a number of other big-time schools. I think LSU was involved. Alex Lemon is not going to be academically eligible. He has shifted to the class of 2021 because he has to return to junior college. And the specs on that aren't great. This is a kid who really easily had an opportunity to be a 2020 kid if he just took care of things in the classroom. He didn't play football this year so that he could take care of things in the classroom and take care of things with his family, and he unfortunately didn't put it together. That's a real red flag. He says he's still committed to Oregon State. Take that with a grain of salt, because we don't know what he's going to do. He's got a lot of stuff on his plate with his family. He's got some academic work to make up now in a big way. So we'll see what happens there. They got Tavis Shippen, who's a top five defensive end in the country. Really like him, another JC guy. Charles Moore is an ace recruiting job by Oregon State. A lot of teams were up to their 25 by the time he announced he was going to transfer from Auburn early in his true freshman season, I think in September last year. Oregon State had a spot. They said, we can put you on scholarship right away. You'll be eligible right at the start of next season, 4 years to play for. Charles Moore was enamored with it. Charles Moore was a top 100 prospect, the number six defensive end in the country. Last recruiting cycle, a year ago today, he was in Auburn's grade, and part of the reason they were graded high at defensive line was they had Charles Moore. So you burn his redshirt year now with a split Auburn-Oregon State season, and now you've got the number six defensive end in the country. His athleticism and his metrics, the way he weighs his footwork, his speed, his shuttle, his 40, his strength, tends to measure up to an all-conference guy. Everything on his measurables says he's a future all-conference defensive lineman. We'll see. Love that addition. Sione Lolohia is a three-star defensive lineman. I think he's really, really good. I think this is a steal. I think he should be a four-star prospect. I think you could make an argument that he was the best defensive lineman that was signed by either Oregon or Oregon State in this recruiting cycle out of high school, including, you know, Oregon's Maciel Afaise, who is now getting four stars on Rivals and 24/7 because of his Polynesian Bowl performance. Sione Lolohia didn't want to go to a ton of camps. Wasn't easy to spot because of where he was playing. But man, I love Sione Lolohia. I think he's got a chance to be an all-conference guy. Love that get. And they also pick up Joe Quillen, an Air Force transfer. Overall, that's good for an A-. The linebacker position, gave him a C. John Miller, really good. I think he's underrated because he's an inch too short. I think that's kind of funny sometimes how we do that with recruiting, where it's like, he's an inch too short, so we're going to knock him down. But he can dunk a basketball. He's a big-time athlete. He's a great basketball player. Tremendous leaping ability, that vertical leap. He's going to be able to go up and knock some balls down from some tight ends, even though he's 6 foot, 6 foot one. Junior Walling from McNary. At one time, I thought he was going to be a four-star prospect. As he got bigger, he slowed down. And his future is going to be interesting because I like him. He's got a high motor. He's a great kid. He's a good football player. His instincts are really good. He runs about a 4.8 or a 4.9 laser. And that's not going to get it done in the Pac-12 consistently at a middle linebacker position. Definitely not an outside linebacker position where he's got to turn his hips and cover. He's gotten tighter as he's gotten bigger. So he may end up being a D lineman. If he's a D lineman, he fits a 4-3 rather than a 3-4. So he's going to be a piece they're going to have to fit in somewhere as he develops. He's going to have to work on his flexibility. He's going to have to work on improving his speed because as he physically matured, he just slowed down. He got bigger and bulkier and slowed down. But I like the player. I like the kid. I just think he's a tweener, and I wonder about his future. Shane Cady is kind of an edge rusher. I think he's a weak side outside linebacker probably. I like him. Good player. Solid addition. They're going to have to hope he's kind of a sleeper. Didn't have a ton of offers, but a good player. I gave the linebacker group a C. The DBs. Man, Colorado has to hate Oregon State right now because their plan, they got a commitment from Alton Julian. Alton Julian's a top 10 corner in the country in the junior college ranks. His cousin is Rajon Wright, who's one of the top three or four corners, JC corners in the country. Their hope was to get Alton Julian and then get Rajon Wright and immediately address their need at corner. Instead, Oregon State flips Alton Julian and Rajon Wright joins him. Oregon State ends up with two top 10 JC corners and absolutely stole Colorado's blueprint. That was their hope. So they had to drop their board down two spots. And it is tough when you get ready-made corners you think can come in and play right away to then go down and continue to find Pac-12 level JC guys you think can play right away. So not only did they get two guys I really like, but they also really stuck it to Colorado. Great work there. Ronald Harge, the third, a decent addition. Jonathan Riley, a safety, comes in. Overall, this group, a B-. From the junior college and transfer ranks, I gave this group a B+. Trayshawn Harrison, I thought, was the gem of Oregon's class in 2018 before he flipped to Florida State. That's a reclamation project that is absolutely worth it. His ceiling is a big-time playmaker. You also add an outside receiver at 6'2" you don't have in on your roster. Charles Moore, I think, is a future all-conference defensive lineman if he lives up to his measurables, to his film, and continues to grow and progress. That was ace recruiting. They steal Colorado's plan at the corner position with two top 10 JC corners. Tavis Shippen, great player. Chance Nolan's the number one junior college quarterback in the country. Love all that. Love all that. Losing Alex Lemon hurt. It just did. And I think they get a ding of a half a grade because it's probably an A- group in the sense that we've seen it for years. It's been the case at Oregon State. Look at their history. Look at Oregon's history. Look at the history of JC guys across the country. They're very hit or miss. For every four or five guys you think you got where you're like, man, we can plug and play, usually two pan out. One's a total bust and two are rotational guys. That's the way it's worked with JC guys in the past. Everywhere I've ever seen it. There have been multiple guys. Simi Cooley comes to mind for Oregon State, but Oregon's got him too. Chris Solomona was a five-star defensive lineman for Oregon. Those guys haven't panned out. They're very hit or miss. It's a flip of the coin. So if half these guys pan out, that's wonderful. And they did a great job. It's worth a B+. But I don't expect all of them to pan out. I expect some to be flameouts because that's the way it works with JC guys. But love the group they got. B+. High school. I give Oregon State a D. And this is where they need to get better. I think they, just as much as I give them credit for pivoting from Sears to Nolan, I am hesitant to say they did the same thing at the high school spot where Ben Goldbertson in the summer looked like a hot commodity. By the end of the year, his stock had cooled, I think it's safe to say, pretty dramatically. And they didn't necessarily have a backup plan there. I think that's a little bit of a disappointment. I think generally speaking, you have to, if you're in the Pac-12, be able to recruit multiple top 700 kids in the country. I'm not talking about top 100 kids. How many top 100 kids do you have? How many top 250 kids do you have? I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about top 700 kids. You have to have more than one or two. And listen, people can say all they want about the recruiting rankings, and I'm good with it. I get it. We've gone over the numbers. In terms of the draft, you're, I think, now I don't have the numbers in front of me, like seven times more likely or something to make the NFL and be drafted if you're a five-star than a four-star, and then you're another close to 10 times more likely if you're a four-star than a three-star. In terms of the Pac-12 and the first-team all-conference teams, you were 55 times more likely to make first-team all-conference if you were a five-star prospect in the Pac-12 than if you were a three-star prospect in the Pac-12. 55 times more likely. So people can spin it however they want to spin it, but the reality is stars matter. And some guys miss, but more guys hit. And that's the reason that LSU and Alabama and Ohio State and those programs recruit at such a high level and are there every year. Clemson, every year. Recruits at a top five level, finishes at a high level. You cannot like Oregon and think Oregon's not doing, you know, you could think Nike or whatever people want to think. The reality is for the last couple of years, they've been recruiting at a higher level and they just won the Rose Bowl. So it matters. And right now, Oregon State is recruiting high school talent at roughly a Boise State level, at roughly a high-level Mountain West. If you look at high school talent alone, they are roughly a good Mountain West program. What's put them over the top under Smith has been a great evaluation of the transfer portal and getting JC guys. At some point, they need to elevate that high school recruiting. I think it comes with wins, but I also think it comes with getting some closers in there. And I still think that's their bugaboo on the staff. Overall, class grade, C+. High school, D. I think this class is very good. But at the same time, let's look at what an average class is, right? An average class in the Pac-12 conference is 6th or 7th. That's average, right? There are 12 teams. 6 or 7 is average, based on how averages work. Oregon State finished 9th. It's improvement. It's definitely improvement, and I think there were some really good things done in this class. Really good things, and that's why they get a C+. Wasn't as high on them last year. I thought it was one of the worst recruiting classes I've ever seen put together in the Pac-12. Seriously. I think there were multiple kids that weren't Pac-12 players. I don't feel that way this year. I think they got a lot of guys who I can see the ceiling as a productive, quality Pac-12 player. That said, they finished in the back half of the Pac-12, and if a C is average, and that's 6th or 7th, and they finish 9th, I think C+ is more than generous when you factor in the progress they've made. Need to do a better job with the high school kids, did a great job with the JC kids, did a great job with the transfers. Overall, it is a C+ from me. Very good step forward, maybe even 2 or 3 steps forward from Coach Smith. But when you finish 9th and 50th in the nation, 9th in the Pac-12, 50th in the nation, there's more work to do. I think that's fair. I don't think that's overly critical. The McDonald's All-American teams came out. They were released Thursday. I've talked a number of times about how good the Oregon women's basketball recruiting class is, that it is almost historically great already. They haven't even done anything yet. Haven't even stepped on campus yet. But in terms of talent, it is an unreal class. 5 5-star recruits. But in football, 5 stars only drop to roughly 30. 32 some years, 27, right in that range. In women's basketball, 53 players are 5-star recruits. So I heard some criticism. They said, hey, they've got 5 5-star players, but let's be real. They really only have 3, maybe 2 girls who would be 5-star recruits in a normal ranking, in a men's basketball ranking, in a football ranking. Women's basketball just does it differently and drops that 5-star distinction way lower. So it's more like 2 or 3 5-stars and 2 or 3 4-stars. Well, the McDonald's All-American game announced their top 24 girls in the country, 12 for the East, 12 for the West, and all 5 Oregon basketball signees made the McDonald's All-American game. All 5 finished among the top 24 players in the country. And we've talked about this. If you've listened to me, if you've read my work, we've talked about this before. The girls who were lower on Oregon's list, the girls who were lower in the recruiting, are the girls who were hurt and had upside. Tahina Pau Pau is from California. The only West Coast kid Oregon got in this class, by the way. Kentucky, Illinois, New Jersey, all over the map. Indiana, Iowa, or excuse me, Illinois. All over the map. Tahina Pau Pau at 14 years old. Kelsey Plum was at Washington. Highest score in the history of the NCAA when she was in college. She grew up in the same area. She used to go back and like scrimmage with the high school girls, kind of give back to that community for her AAU team. And she said at the time that Tahina Pau Pau at 14 could have played Pac-12 basketball. She was injured. She injured her knee twice and missed years. She missed 2 years of her basketball career in high school. So her stock dropped. She's healthy now. And she's the prodigy that everyone was talking about. She has been unbelievable. She's the lowest one on Oregon's class in terms of the rankings because she hasn't played in 2 years. But now that she's playing, I don't even think it's remotely a stretch to say she's a top 20 player in the country and that she's one of the top 2 or 3 point guards in the country. She's been unbelievable. She's every bit as good as everyone said. In fact, when she was 14, they said she had a chance and they thought she would end up being the best player ever out of San Diego. That included Kelsey Plum, the highest scorer in the history of the NCAA for women's basketball. That's how high her stock was before she got hurt. She looks back. She looks back to that. If she can stay healthy, she's going to be big time. Maddie Shear is a guard from Kentucky, really talented player. Sydney Parrish is the number 2 shooting guard in the country. Kylie Watson's one of the top 4 or 5 forwards in the country. Those are all kind of known commodities. And then we get to Angela Dugalich, another player who was lower in the rankings of the 5. Still a 5-star prospect, right? So we're kind of nitpicking here. Angela Dugalich went and played for a national team this summer. She comes back, and she was on a team where she was kind of supposed to be a distributor, not a whole lot of numbers. This year, she's supposed to be the go-to. And she is killing it. After she signed, had a chance to talk with people who said she is the one who people don't fully know about. Tahina Paopao, people knew when she was 14. She's going to get back to that. People don't realize how high the upside is on this Angela Dugulich. She's got a chance to be top 7, 8, 9, 10 player in the country because she's tall and she can do everything. She's kind of a B-minus Satu Sabally, to give you an idea. She can pass, she can shoot, you know, she can score at all three levels. She can rebound, she can do everything. And she's been really impressive this year. Her numbers are off the charts. Her production is off the charts. On all the recruiting rankings, she's moving up. Everybody knew Sydney Parrish, number two shooting guard in the country, maybe the best shooter in the country, or second best shooter in the country. Kylie Watson, top five forward in the country. Everybody knew about her. Maddie Shear, another player, top 20 in the nation. Everybody knows. Remarkable superstar. The two players that Oregon, in air quotes, took flyers on, again, they're five-star players. The two players that were lower five-stars that people went, well, we'll see, were Dugulich and Paopao, and you could make an argument they've been the two best seniors this high school season. This class is unreal. Oregon State lands Sasha Goforth, who might, by the way, be the best of this group. I just mentioned five players for Oregon. You could make an argument Sasha Goforth was actually the best of the six. Now, she doesn't have four other five-stars coming in with her, but she is remarkably talented. Sasha Goforth, the Oregon State signee, makes the list. She is from Arkansas. She is invited to the McDonald's All-American game. And Cameron Brink played for Southridge. This year, she transferred to Mountainside. Cameron Brink, the local star committed to Stanford, she makes the list. A lot of local talent and a lot of local ties to that girls' McDonald's All-American game. That'll be April 1st, nationally televised. I believe it starts at 4 p.m. Pacific time. The boys' game follows at 6 p.m. Pacific time. Not as exciting locally. Zaire Williams is considering Oregon. He's got Oregon among his handful of finalists. He's undecided. He's been invited to the game. Oregon only has a point guard who's number 7 point guard in the country, but not a McDonald's All-American. So the boys game doesn't have as many ties locally, but Oregon State and Oregon and Oregon high school fans will all be excited about that McDonald's All-American game. On the girls side, that'll be April 1st. Again, that game's played at 4 p.m. April 1st. It's played in Houston at the Toyota Center. The Under Armour All-American game, the Polynesian Bowl, the Adidas All-American Bowl, they're done. And it's time for final rankings. And maybe Oregon fan was surprised. I hope they weren't. I tried to talk about it on the show. Dante Manning was the highest-rated defensive back commit in the history of the program. He's a big-time talent. He was right on the bubble of being a five-star prospect. Rivals jumped him up 170, 180 spots from like 240 to 60th in the country, 61st in the country. That, along the composite average, if you average out Rivals ranking, ESPN ranking, and 24/7 sports ranking, made him the number 32 prospect in the country, which is good for five-star status. Dante Manning is Oregon's third five-star recruit. He joins Justin Flo and Noah Sewell. And again, you look historically at what happens when teams land three five-star defensive players in a single class. Whether it's the Pac-12 or nationally, when you get three five-stars in a single class, that tends to lead to an elite, 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 one more, elite defense in the next 2 to 3 years. Mark it down. It's just historically the way it's worked. If you look across the country at teams, and I think this came from, might have come from Matt Prehm, might have come from Kevin Wade on 24/7 Sports. One of the two of them tweeted something about teams that have landed three five-star prospects in a single class and what they've done nationally. And the three examples they gave, all three teams made the college football playoff within 2, 3, or 4 years. It matters. It matters, and it means Oregon's got a really good chance to be very, very, very good very, very soon. In discussing its final rankings, one of the things Rob Cassidy, he's home base is Florida, he picked Noah Sewell as the guy he was most bullish on in the rankings that he felt was too low. Noah Sewell jumped up to the number 10 player in the country. Justin Flo was at number 8. He said, I think Sewell should have been higher. Yeah, that's nitpicky, but I think he's as much of a slam dunk as anybody in the country to be a future first-round NFL draft pick. I think Noah Sewell's going to be the better college player. I think Noah Sewell's going to be the guy that potentially is up for national awards. I think Justin Flo is the better NFL prospect. And both will be very good. Both are going to be all-conference guys at Oregon. They're as much slam-dunk linebackers, barring injury or off-the-field issues, which so far neither of them has any issue there. But in terms of the film and projecting it forward, and we've talked about this before too, inside linebackers are not generally five-star prospects. Some years there's one, some years there's zero. This year I think there's two or three, and Oregon got the top two. And this is as good a linebacker group as we've seen in a decade. This is a really deep linebacker group this year, and Oregon got the top two guys. Again, when we're looking at position depth across the country, you could make an argument linebacker, the top level quarterbacks and receivers are really, really deep in 2020, and Oregon cleaned up at linebacker. These two kids are both all-conference guys. They both play as freshmen unquestionably, especially when you look at what's coming back at linebacker for Oregon. Troy Dye's gone. Lamar Winston had a really rough year anyway, but he'll be gone. They have some replacing to do. Those two guys are going to come in and play and be impact players. Oregon with 3 5-star guys. And listen, those guys come in and do their thing in All-American games, and you expect it, right? Justin Flo, one of the standouts of the Polynesian Bowl. Noah Sewell was named the alpha dog of the Adidas All-American game, All-American Bowl, which is telling. That game has a ton of five-star talent, and for him to look the best of any player on the field says something. But as much as everybody expects that, you don't necessarily expect the 3 and 4-star guys to be major standouts. Chris Hudson was a big-time standout in the Polynesian Bowl, and he was exactly as advertised. Ran great routes, gets open, ability to make plays after the catch, but questionable hands. He had a drop. He had a fumble near the goal line in the fourth quarter late in the game that proved costly. Those are things he's got to work on. The scouting report was exactly right. Make a ton of catches, can do a ton of things. He's got to have better hands. He's got to have better ball security. And both of those things showed up in the Polynesian Bowl. I love it when scouts can have an evaluation on a kid, and then it happens in front of them in the Polynesian Bowl or in one of those bowl games on national television. You go, okay, got that kid pegged. Chris Hudson's going to make a lot of plays. If he can keep from, you know, if he can fix the drops, if he can fix the fumble issues, he's got a chance to be a really special player. The guy that stands out to me, and apparently everybody else, but I tweeted it at the time, Maciel Afa-Ise, I tweeted it at halftime of the Polynesian Bowl, has a chance to be remarkably good. Remarkably good. He's bigger. He's bigger than Jalen Jelks. He's not as big as DeForest Buckner, but he plays kind of more Bucknery than Jelks. So he's kind of a Jelks-Buckner hybrid. This kid is a monster. 6'5", 260 pounds, versatile. Depending on how his body grows, he can play any of those spots up front in a 3-4 defense and be effective. He could play that middle if he wants to put on the pounds. If he wants to play either defensive end spot, he can do it. Had a monster sack on DJ Uiagalelei. DJ Uiagalelei is humongous. He's like 6'4", 6'5", 230. Maciel Afa-Ise just absolutely crushed him in the first half of that game. I love his blend of size, athleticism, and quickness off the ball. This is a kid that I immediately watching that game go, that kid stands out. Who is that? Because you can't really tell. It's really hard to tell in those games where they're all wearing white uniforms and they're all from all over the country. So you got to like check. It's like, okay, got the number. I'm going to look up the roster, see who it is. Oh, it's Oregon's commit. Maciel Afa-Ise. Kid's a freaking baller. He's a 3-star prospect, and I wrote, there's no way. I mean, this kid's better than that. Already, Rivals has bumped him up to a 4-star prospect. The guys at 24/7 say he's going to get a major, major bump in the next rating. This kid's a 4-star prospect. And this is where it's funny sometimes, where you go through the whole recruiting cycle and all the way through a guy's a 3-star, and then you get a chance to see him, and you go, what the heck? How in the world is that guy a 3-star? Dylan Mitchell was the same way, the wide receiver who went to Oregon. He was a 3-star prospect all the way through. You watch his highlights, you go, what's going on? What is this? And then late in the process, he gets bumped up to a 4-star. And you go, okay, this makes more sense. Afa-Ise is a great addition. Afa-Ise is a steal. I love what he could potentially be next to Kayvon Thibodeau and with Justin Flo, Mace Funa, Noah Sewell, all in that front seven. That's a dangerous, dangerous front seven. And if you're an Oregon fan and you watch Maciel, if you didn't watch him, just take my word for it, I guess. If you did watch him, you're nodding along. because he looked really good. And then after that game, right, maybe the game wasn't even over. I started DMing a couple people involved with recruiting rankings and just said, man, Afa Ise. And the response was, yeah, we know. Big-time talent. Really good player. He's good. He's really good. And for three-star prospect, that kid is not a three-star prospect. That's an absolute steal. Great job of evaluating by Oregon. They got themselves a player who I think has a chance. I don't know that he's ever going to put up monster numbers, but he's kind of that hold your spot, make plays. When the balls run to his side, he's going to be able to shed blockers, make plays. He'll have 3, 4, 5, 6 sacks a year when he's good. That's all you really need from your potential, you know, a nose tackle or a big-bodied defensive end, and not necessarily your edge-rushing defensive end. Really like what he brings to the table. I think that's it for today's show. We talked about the grades for Oregon State's class, the job they did with transfers, adding Treshawn Harrison late. We talked about the McDonald's All-American rosters. All five of Oregon's signees in women's basketball make the 24-athlete list for the McDonald's All-American game. It's an unbelievable achievement for Coach Graves. Sabrina Ionescu is obviously going to move on after this year, but they are retooling and reloading. Might take them some time to be elite again, especially if Satu Sabally declares for the WNBA draft. But if she doesn't, they've got quite the group coming back. And we talked about Dante Manning adding a fifth star. And the potential breakout, not only in rankings, but in terms of what he projects as going forward, of Maciel Afa Ise, who I was truly, there aren't too many times that I watch a three-star and go, whoa, I am stunned. That is different. That is special. That is not what his evaluation reads. And then a week later, Rivals has him as a four-star. 24/7's about to have him as a four-star. What a steal. Great job by Oregon. We'll be back next week with a show at the regular time on Monday. The men's basketball season having games on Thursday. Obviously, those are on air on 1080 The Fan for the Ducks. Because of that, we got bumped. We got bumped to Monday during the basketball season. Gives me more time, to be honest with you. I've got Monday, and then I can kind of get into the visitors, and then it's fresh on Monday in terms of who visited and how those visits went. I actually like it better. But anyway, thank you for listening to Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. Appreciate you as always, and great job here closing out, it looks like, from the Beavs and potential here for the Ducks with who they're hosting down the stretch.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.